Chapter 8. Chris is obviously wary of Styles' inquiry. He takes his time thinking about how to respond.
Why are you asking me this now?
Styles takes out his phone and pulls up a picture he took of Cora the previous day.
This is Cora, he says, showing it to Chris. I just got finished listening to her tell me about the last few years she spent in one of those prisons, about how they would give her different drugs to see how she responded, about how they injured her over and over again so they could time her healing, about how, he practically chokes on the words. Scott's hand squeezes down on his shoulder, grounding him. He stops and takes a breath.
It was academic before, he says. I knew I couldn't do anything about it, so I tried not to think about it. I told myself that the vast majority of the people in those prisons, werewolf or no, had probably done something to deserve being put in them. But she was a child. She was a child and they tortured her. She can't remember how to shift, Chris. She's a born wolf who can't do the full shift because of what they did to her. She's Derek's sister who escaped the fire that night and ran and kept running until they caught her. He has to stop to take another breath, which is fine. Chris looks like he just got knifed in the gut.
You know me, Chris, Styles finally says, pinching the bridge of his nose.
When he opens his eyes again, they're crimson.
You know me. So you'll understand what it means when I say that I am this close.
He holds out two fingers, an inch apart to demonstrate.
To declaring war on the hunters and killing the fuck out of any of them who aren't you. For the love of God, help me direct that anger towards the people who deserve it.
Jesus, Chris mutters.
After a moment, he jerks his head towards the kitchen and says,
Come on, I need a drink.
Styles nods and follows. Chris gets a beer out of the fridge for himself and offers the teenagers a soda. Scott and Allison take one. Styles asks for water instead. Chris pours him a glass and then takes a swallow of his beer.
I first found out about the prisons when I was 25, he says,
after a moment to gather his thoughts.
I had a question about a werewolf who had escaped during a hunt, about how long they could survive in sub-zero temperatures. I mentioned it to a friend of mine. Well, more of a colleague than a friend. Jim Stoddard.
Stoddard? Styles rubs his hands over his face. The name's familiar.
You met his niece, Sally, at the conclave, Chris says.
Allison elbows Styles gently and says, Veruca.
Oh, right,
Styles says, then frowns.
But I don't think that's where I'm recognizing it from. I feel like I've seen it written down before.
He shakes his head when he can't remember where. Never mind, they're big shots, right? Chris nods.
They're the biggest family on the East Coast. Anyway, Jim is older than me by about 10 years. He said, basically, that it was a good question and he didn't know the answer to it. I basically let it drop and didn't think much more of it. But he called me about a month later with an answer. I wanted to know how he had gotten it, so he told me. They'd taken a few werewolves and found out.
Styles tries to keep his fists from clenching.
Okay, and?
I discussed it with my father, Chris says. He assured me that only werewolves who deserved to be there were there.
He takes another swig of his beer.
I've always known that not every hunter follows the code, and I saw it as a necessary evil. There are things we've learned that we've been able to use against werewolves that have probably saved lives, like sonic pulse emitters and the right voltages to use. To be honest, I basically saw it as an extended death penalty. Cruel, yes, but not lasting. I figured most werewolves were probably dead within a few weeks of being imprisoned, given what my father described as happening there. I didn't know anyone who has ever held longer than that until this past conclave. And it never, ever occurred to me that they would keep a child there.
Styles nods slowly. He believes Chris. How many of these places are there? Who runs them?
I know the Stoddards run one, which is... Hang on, we need a map.
Chris abruptly pushes away from the table and comes back with a sheet of paper. He sketches out a rough picture of the United States.
There are about a dozen major hunting families or cooperatives in the United States right now, and that's separating out each Argent clan from each other. Cooperatives? Scott asks. Like Stella Jones up in the Northwest, Chris says, still drawing quickly. She's not from a family, but she's gathered some like-minded individuals. Then you've got Aronson up north, the Stoddards in the Northeast. They both have a lot of territory because they're both big families. Julian's down in the Deep South, us in California, the Gutierrez family in the Southwest. Henry Argent's territory is in Indiana and Illinois. The Winchesters, here on the plains, Arnell in the Smoky Mountains, although not so much anymore.
He continues to tap the map. Nazario here, Martin Drake and his guys here, Peretti down in Florida, and this Bible-thumping group of crazies in Texas. That's about everyone.
How much do you know about the Gutierrez family? Stiles asks, sipping his water. He's calmed down a lot now, although he still feels on edge.
Not a hell of a lot, Chris says. I've met a few of them on and off through the years. Why?
Cora says that they had her in a collar to keep her from shifting, Stiles says. The wrists and ankles get skinnier, you know, but the neck gets bigger. I've seen collars like that before. Ruben Gutierrez used them when he captured half my pack last winter. Cora says she escaped to the desert and wound up in Mexico, so odds are good she was in the Southwest somewhere. That's the Gutierrez family's territory.
Well, I know that they do have one, down south of Tuscan, so that seems likely, Chris says, with a slight nod. He sighs and adds, the Stoddards have one somewhere in Vermont, I think. And there's one in Wyoming. Those are the only three that I know of.
Stiles back stiffens. Is that McHale's territory?
No, Chris says, shaking his head. He's further north than that. Montana, the Dakotas, I think Minnesota. That's Nazario land. The family Vivian was from. And Victoria.
Okay.
Stiles relaxes a little. Then he lets out another breath.
Okay. That's enough to go on for now, I think.
Chris looks a little apprehensive. What are you going to do?
I don't know yet, Stiles says. I need to think about this. Talk it over with some people.
I have a concern, Chris says. If Cora came from one of these prisons, how did she get out? You have to acknowledge the possibility that she was released on purpose.
I know. I'm going to have Deaton check her out. Hopefully there aren't any grenades under the hood.
Let me ask a few questions, Chris says. I'll be discreet. I know who I can and can't trust. If people are escaping from prisons, someone will know about it. Let me see what I can find out.
He sees Stiles hesitate and says,
Stiles, I don't like this any better than you. I've got your back on this.
Stiles nods. Okay, thanks. Let me know what you find out.
By the time Stiles gets home from the Argent house with the others, Derek and Cora have emerged from the studio. Since Derek isn't a pile of frothing rage, Stiles can conclude that Cora hasn't told him anything about where she's been. Which is fine. It's her choice to make. The two of them are on the sofa, watching television. Stiles makes a quick call to Deaton to see if they can stop by. It's approaching the end of the workday at this point, so he's not surprised when Deaton says to come by the clinic in about an hour. An hour gives Stiles just enough time to make a batch of oatmeal raisin cookies, which he personally hates, but Deaton likes, and he tries to make a batch whenever he's asking the veterinarian for a favor. Then he approaches the two Hales on the sofa, waiting until their episode is over. Derek has apparently decided he's going to introduce his sister to My Little Pony's Friendship is Magic. Cora is enthralled, despite herself.
This is not the sort of thing I usually like,
she says when she sees Styles looking at her. Styles lifts his hands and says, "Hey, I don't judge." He grins when Cora wrinkles her nose at him. "Thought we'd take a trip down to the clinic to see Dr. Deaton."
"What for?"
Derek asks, looking up. "Just to get Cora checked out. I'm not a doctor, after all." Derek frowns, clearly suspecting that there's more to it than that. He looks between the two of them, and then Cora ducks her head and says, "It's a good idea. I already said it was okay."
"All right," Derek says,
getting to his feet. The three of them get into the Jeep. Derek doesn't ask Styles where he went, although Styles knows that Derek knows him well enough to have realized he was upset about something. They'll talk about it later. He'll get some of the details at Deaton's, at least. They park in the back and stroll in through the back door, which Deaton has left unlocked. The veterinarian looks up as they come in, wearing his usual warm smile.
"Styles, what can I..."
he begins, and then he sees Cora standing behind them. His eyes go wide.
"Oh my God, Cora!"
Derek blinks, then looks at Styles.
"You didn't tell him?"
Honestly, it didn't occur to me," Styles says. "I forgot that he knew you guys as kids." He clears his throat.
Dr. Deaton? Cora. Cora, Dr. Deaton. How can you be alive?"
Deaton asks, moving over to her and extending both hands to take hers into his own. Cora's flushing pink and studying the floor.
"I ran really fast," she mutters.
Derek gives her shoulder a squeeze, and Styles says, "Cora escaped from the house with her uncle, who was killed about a year later. She's been around the block a few times, and we just thought we should get her checked out. Make sure there are no surprises." Deaton lets go of Cora's hands and says,
"I'm sorry. Normally I'm the one being vague and cryptic. You're going to have to give me a hand here, because I don't actually know what you want me to do."
"He wants to make sure I'm not some sort of sleeper agent," Cora bites out. Derek blinks at her, then looks at Styles, who gives a little shrug. Cora keeps her gaze trained on a spot on the far wall as she continues. "I spent some time captured by some hunters, and were really not sure if I made a daring escape or if they wanted me to get out." Since Cora's given them the basics, Styles adds, "I think it's very unlikely, but I just want to be sure."
"Of course," Deaton says. "Cora, if you would," he says, gesturing to the door down to the basement.
She nods, squares her jaw, and starts down the steps.
"Do you want me to come with you?"
Derek asks, looking awkward. "I'll be okay," she says. Deaton gives Derek a reassuring smile and then follows her, closing the trap door behind them. Styles sighs and leans his elbows against the exam table in the center of the room. He's suddenly wretchedly tired. He hasn't even thought about dinner, and texts Jake to tell him to order some food if the others are hungry. They'll be turning up at the den soon enough, now that it's the dinner hour. He startles a little when Derek rubs his back with one hand.
"How much time?"
Derek finally asks. It takes Styles a minute to track the conversation back and figure out what Derek is asking. "She's not sure. A couple years, probably." Derek's jaw tightens, but he seems to have come to the conclusion that Styles isn't giving him details because he doesn't want to violate Cora's privacy.
"What are we doing about it?"
"Chris is looking into things for me," Styles says. He sees the look on Derek's face and gives a little sigh. He knows that Derek has never quite forgiven Chris for some of the things his family had done. Allison, yes. Chris, no. He doesn't blame Derek for that, even though he himself trusts Chris 100%. There's a lot of trauma there that Styles simply can't heal. He has his own reasons, Derek. He doesn't like the idea of people keeping children in these prisons.
"Okay," Derek finally says.
I know which one she was in and who was probably responsible, Stiles says. But for the moment, my primary concern is making sure that she escaped legitimately. Not that she was let go for some sort of nefarious purpose. Yes, we will deal with these people. But we kind of have bigger fish to fry at the moment, don't you think? Derek looks at Stiles with full eyebrows of judginess employed. But then he sighs.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Stiles squeezes his wrist. We will deal with this, he repeats, and Derek nods. About another 20 minutes pass before Deaton comes upstairs with Cora in his wake.
She's fine, he says. To the best of my knowledge, there's been no magic done on her.
Okay, Stiles says. Thanks. He holds up the package of cookies and says, I'll just leave these here. Deaton looks amused, probably because he's told Stiles many times that the bribery and or payment isn't necessary, that he's always happy to help, that he made Talia Hale a promise about looking out for her children. He bids them good night, and they head back to the den. Cora seems quiet and a little bit subdued. Stiles tells her, So, I figured out where you were being held. We'll look into it more once we've dealt with Deucalion. Cora nods and says, Okay. But then just rests her head against Derek's shoulder and closes her eyes. Deucalion takes his sweet time in making a move, which, of course, irritates Stiles beyond measure. He's not sure if Deucalion is doing it to annoy him specifically, or just because he's waiting for the opportune moment. In a way, Deucalion biding time is a good thing. The longer he takes, the more likely it is that backup will arrive. But Stiles hates waiting. He always has and always will. Nothing drives him crazy faster than sitting on his hands with nothing to do. That's hardly news, of course, and he's developed strategies for dealing with it. So he tries to keep himself busy. There really is plenty for him to do, even without him trying to micromanage his pack's schedules and make sure nobody is ever alone. But even so, he's more on edge than usual, which probably explains what happens 3 days after he met Deucalion for the first time. He's in the study, working on his laptop, when Derek pokes his head in.
I'm going out. Is that okay?
Sure, Stiles says, barely looking up. Where to?
Out to lunch with Jennifer, Derek says. I thought I might show her a couple of the art shops downtown that she might like.
Oh, Stiles says, ignoring the by now familiar clenching of his gut. Okay, sure, just make sure you don't go alone. Bring Lydia or somebody. She likes shopping.
I was going to bring Scott and Allison, Derek says. I figured they could actually sit with us, make it like a double date.
It's such a casual comment that it almost doesn't register. Stiles is halfway through nodding before his stomach does a complete somersault, and he blurts out, Wait, what? A date? Are you going on a date with her? Derek blinks at him, taken off guard.
No, I mean, not like a date. I mean, just, you know, lunch. It's not a date. She's just a friend.
Stiles forces himself to stop. He's keenly aware that he's 2 seconds away from saying something that he has no right to say, that everyone will regret later. He takes a deep breath. I don't think I can have this conversation right now, he says carefully. You should go on and go to lunch with Jennifer. I'm just going to go. He turns and walks away as quickly as he can without breaking into a jog. He feels like the wind has been knocked out of him. Everything inside him is churning in a mixture of jealousy, anger, and fear. He stops about 50 feet away from the house and calls Scott. He sounds clueless when he picks up, so apparently Derek hasn't had a freakout. Scott, will you make sure that Derek still goes out for lunch with Jennifer? Stiles asks. It's not his fault or hers that I'm all fucked up about this, okay?
I'll see what I can do, Scott says. He sounds a little dubious, which is fair. Derek is not known for taking advice or orders from Scott. Styles spends some quality time beating up on his favorite old CPR dummy with his baseball bat until he's exhausted and his muscles ache. He's so intent on it that he nearly brains Erica when she turns up behind him. "Whoa there, cowboy," she says, lifting her hands. "I surrender." "Jesus," Styles mutters. All that talk about never hurting one of his betas, and he just nearly killed one by accident. "I don't want to talk about it."
"Yeah, I know," Erica says. "But I think maybe you need to."
Styles sighs and just drops to sit on the ground. "Did he go?"
"Yeah, he's not mad. More than anything, he just seems confused as to why you're upset."
"Well, that's probably better than him knowing why I'm upset," Styles says with a sigh. "I've got no fucking right."
"Hey,"
Erica says, sitting down next to him and giving him a light smack upside the head. "Let's be real here for a minute. Open relationships are hard. Mature, grown adults have trouble with this stuff. And you're acting like Derek was just A-okay with everything in the beginning, and now you're the one who's causing all the trouble. I might remind you that it took him a year to come to terms with the fact that you had a sex drive, and 3 joints before he could talk about it with you for the first time. And let's not go into the fact that he treated me like shit for the first month after we started sleeping together, or how many showers you had to take until he got used to it."
Styles sighs. She has a point. Derek hadn't exactly accepted his and Erica's relationship gracefully. Not that he blames him for that.
"Derek's got issues, though."
"What, and you don't?" Erica rolls her eyes at him. "Look, you're entitled to have feelings, Styles. And the whole thing with Derek and Jennifer is not that similar to you and me. We never went on anything that could be considered a date. I sleep with lots of guys. I went into it well aware that we were never going to get married. I don't think Derek's had any of those talks with Jennifer. So she probably thinks they are dating. Which sucks for her, if nothing else. So yeah, I think you've got a right to tell Derek that he can sleep with whoever he wants, but it has to be something no strings attached. And I don't think he's going to get that with Jennifer. Seriously, I saw her at the coffee shop the other day. Hearts in her eyes."
"Ugh," Styles says. "Okay, I'll talk to him."
"Good," Erica says. "Things are stressful and complicated enough without this being an issue."
She gets to her feet and offers Styles a hand up.
"Come on, let's go inside where I can remind you what casual sex is supposed to be like."
Styles sighs. "Believe it or not, I'm really not in the mood. Maybe tomorrow."
"Fine," Erica says, wrinkling her nose. "But I expect to be rewarded for my patience."
Styles gives her a hug and a quick kiss before he goes up to the spare room to brood. It's one place that nobody will look for him. He paces around and mentally rehearses different things he can say to Derek. Then he mentally rehearses all the hurt, confused looks he's going to get, and the different horrible things Derek could say in reply, and the inevitable freakout he's going to have.
"Fuck, I can't do this right now," he groans. "I need help."
He flops down on the bed and pulls out his phone, thumbing down the list and dialing. It rings twice, then a professional voice picks up.
"Fresno Crisis and Counseling Center."
"Hey, this is Styles Stolinski. I need to schedule an appointment with Dr. Mulrooney," he says, kicking his feet back and forth in the air.
"Is it an emergency?"
"No," Styles says. "And can it be a Skype session?"
Normally this might engender questions, but Styles has done Skype counseling with Gwen before, both during their semester in Neptune and after he had been shot and wasn't allowed to travel. The secretary says sure, and then says,
"How about Friday at 11:30?
Styles thinks about this, then says,
"Okay, you're gonna laugh at me, but what day is it?"
Amused, the secretary says,
"It's Wednesday now."
"Okay then, yeah, Friday at 11:30 sounds great."
Styles thanks the woman, hangs up, and puts the appointment in his phone. Skype sessions are good for two reasons. The first, obvious one, is that they save time and he doesn't have to go all the way to Fresno. But another benefit, particularly in this case, is that he can do it without Derek present. Jack always attends all his sessions, so it can become awkward to discuss things that involve him. He buries himself in research he's gathered, incidents in other towns where Deucalion and his cronies have shown up, in an effort to learn more about his methods. By the time he hears Derek and the others arrive back at the den, he's calmed down. He jogs down the stairs and jumps onto Derek, wrapping his legs around the werewolf's waist. "Hi," he says.
"Hi, and also get off me, you maniac,"
Derek growls, contentedly nuzzling at his hair. "Sorry about earlier," Styles says. And then, before Derek can respond, "Did you have a good time?"
"Yeah, it was fun," Derek says.
Styles hops down and says, "Good." It's probably a good thing that Styles doesn't approach the subject of Jennifer, because it's later that evening that Deucalion finally makes his first move. Styles is keenly in tune with his pack now in a way that he wasn't in their early days. He's aware of it the moment that something goes down. He knows it's Erica and Isaac, and then, a minute later, Boyd. They were on their way home from the ice rink, and he knows they were together. It seems unlikely that they were run off the road, which makes it more likely that whatever is happening is at the rink. That's a good 15 minutes by car. By the time they got there to help, it would be over. That wouldn't keep him placated forever, when he desperately wants to go to their rescue. But it's quick, less than a minute. He's gathered the others and they're all pacing around outside, waiting for something to do. Only Jake isn't there. He had gone out with some of his school friends. Styles considers calling him, but decides against it. Jake isn't much help in situations like this. It's been another 5 minutes when his phone chimes, and he looks down to see that he has a text. It's from Erica, and it reads,
3-for-1 special.
What the hell does that mean? Scott asks, looking over his shoulder. Styles types, "Where?" into his phone, and glances up. He means that he'll give the three of them back after I kill one of you. The words come out calm and collected, which is impressive, given that he'd rather be hysterical. The phone chimes again with a set of GPS coordinates. Styles plugs them into a map and finds that it's on the south side of Beacon Hills, in the woods, but not on the preserve. Let's go. They load up into several cars and head away from the den. It takes nearly 10 minutes to drive to where the road ends, and then they have to walk further still. The sun has set, the forest is getting dark, and Styles is twitchy and edgy. He starts to see orange light flickering through the trees up ahead. Firelight, he's almost sure of it. When they come out into a clearing, he sees that he was correct. JC and Tsukiko are both standing about 20 paces away, holding actual torches. Deucalion is standing by the path, a smug look on his face, with Felicia and Ennis flanking him. Styles ignores them to look past him, where his betas are. Each of them are tied to a metal folding chair, about 100 feet away. Scott makes a noise, an aborted sniff, like he just got a nose of something unpleasant. "Gasoline," he says, not bothering to stay quiet. Deucalion agrees. "Crude, but effective. Fire is, after all, one very good way for killing werewolves." Derek gives a low growl, and Styles puts a hand on his arm, assessing the situation. Even in the dim light, he can see that there's a circle on the ground that's been doused in the gasoline. "So, I kill one of my betas, or you'll have your lackeys there set fire to the circle, and then the three betas in the center of the circle will burn to death?" he surmises.
"That's the general idea," Deucalion says. "I could choose for you, if you weren't comfortable doing it yourself."
Styles continues to study the situation for a few moments, then says, "Derek, go wait in the car.
Allison, go with him. For a moment, it looks like Derek might protest, but then he gives the torches an uneasy glance and nods. Stiles waits until the sound of his footsteps fade. Deucalion is just watching him with that smug smile. Stiles considers his resources. The three betas in the circle have obviously tried to get free. They're tied up, not chained, but it still must be something better than duct tape, or they would have gotten out by now. That or Deucalion told them they'd be killed if they tried. Either way, it'd be a short enough dash. He glances around casually at the betas who are on his side of the circle with him, all of whom are tensed and ready for action. Then he smiles at Deucalion and says, "You're gonna have to do better than that." With that, he bolts into the circle. He's reached the three betas before JC and Tsukiko recover from their surprise enough to touch their torches to the ground. There's a whoomp noise as the flames go up around him. He drops to his knees beside Isaac, who's closest, and pulls out his Leatherman, flicking out one of the blades. It slices easily enough through the first coil of rope, so whatever it is, it's not something that a wolf couldn't stand up to under normal circumstances. Seeing that, he pulls out another knife and tosses it to Lydia, who tends to be the fastest. The other betas are already approaching, and they're ahead of the flames. The real question is, will the other alphas attack them when they try to leave? Stiles is guessing not. The ploy didn't work, so Deucalion will pull out. He's got Isaac freed in about 10 seconds, and Lydia has almost got Boyd free. Erica is swearing through the duct tape gag as Stiles starts on the rope. "Get out of here, numbnuts! You're the one who can't heal!" she spits out when Scott yanks the tape off her mouth. "I'm fine," Stiles says, coughing a little as the last of the ropes come undone. "What now?" Mac asks, looking around wildly as the flames close in on them. "Run like hell, jump as high and far as you can, and then stop, drop, and roll like they told us as kids," Stiles says. Isaac's on his feet. "I'll take you," he says. And when Stiles opens his mouth, he says, "The higher above the flames you are, the better." Stiles gives it a brief second to consider, then nods and scrambles onto Isaac's shoulders like he's playing a game of chicken in a swimming pool. All of them run for the flames and give them a flying leap. Stiles feels them lick at his ankles, but he comes through on the other side with nothing more than a few lungfuls of smoke. He sees several of his wolves, little patches of flames on their clothes, but they're smothering them out, and they seem unharmed. When he gets to his feet, he looks around for Deucalion. But as he suspected, the alphas are nowhere to be seen. "Well," he mutters, "I guess this round goes to us." "Better call your dad about the fire," Denny says. "If I'm not mistaken, Allison already has," Stiles says, tapping his phone. She picks up a moment later, and he tells her that they're fine. The alphas are gone, and she confirms that she did call Sheriff Stilinski as soon as she heard the fire starting. Then she tells him that Derek is already starting back down the path, which is no surprise. They're reunited a few minutes later, and the three betas who had been captured have gotten a great deal of hugs. Stiles inquires about the rope, and Boyd says, "Nah, it was flimsy, but he'd soaked it in wolfsbane or something." He holds out his wrists to show some nasty marks. "The more we struggled, the worse it got, so..."
"We knew you were coming, so we figured we'd just sit tight," Isaac says with a nod.
"Okay, did you notice anything when they took you?"
"Nope," Erica says. "It was Ennis, that much I saw, but it was pretty much just a right hook to the face, down and out."
"Figured," Stiles says. He huffs out a sigh. "Okay, we need to go back to the den and watch a movie or something. I don't want any of you out of my sight for a while. Boyd, Derek and I will drive you back to the rink to pick up your car. Allison, will you pick up Jake on your way back to the den?" he adds, and she nods. "Cool, I'll see you back there in a bit."